this week on the RV Podcast.
What you need to know about e-bikes for RVers, where you can ride them, where you can't, and why they are so popular.
There's some serious price gouging going on by campgrounds along the path of next month's total eclipse.
GM is recalling 820,000 of some of the most popular trucks for a major safety issue, many of which are used as tow vehicles by RVers.
All this plus the RV news of the week and your questions coming up in episode 489 of the RV Podcast.
Hello, everyone. I'm Mike Wendland, and this is my lifelong traveling companion and my bride, Jennifer. We should remind you that you can watch the video version of this podcast on our RV Lifestyle YouTube channel. All you got to do is go to youtube.com/RV Lifestyle. And of course, if you prefer an audio-only podcast, you can hear us through your favorite podcast app, or you can listen now through the player below.
And this week finds us along the Alabama Gulf Coast, where we're continuing our review of Class B RVs. We're in our second vehicle now, a 22-foot-long Coachman Beyond with the Li3 lithium package. This van is on the Ford Transit 350 chassis.
Now, we'll be doing reviews on all of the RVs that we're going to check in about a month or so, and eventually we'll have tested five different models on various chassis.
When we're done, we'll post the reviews on our YouTube RV Lifestyle channel. That will be sometime next month.
So meantime, we're posting some of the photos and we're sharing preliminary impressions on this ongoing project on our new RV Lifestyle community. And if you haven't joined, head over there and follow along. Its address is simple, just community.rvlifestyle.com. You can't miss us. It's a really neat little community filled with over 20 different RV lifestyle discussion spaces or discussion groups, anything you're interested in. Come join. It's absolutely free to join. So much nicer, kinder, and easier to navigate than Facebook. Check it out, community.rvlifestyle.com. We are still down in on the Gulf Coast, and the weather, it's grudgingly getting better, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, the sun was shining today, so that's very encouraging.
And when the sun shines, that's always a good sign. So, all right, quick break, and then the social media buzz coming right up.
The one thing that can ruin a perfect RV trip is a bad mattress. And believe us, we know. Over the years, we've tried many, and we have found them all wanting until now.
Now, we sleep on the RV mattress by Brooklyn Bedding. Quite simply, it's the best we've ever slept on.
We chose a queen-size Aurora Lux medium firm mattress that arrived tightly rolled in a box. All we did was put it on the bed, unroll it, and wait for it to recover from the compression. Then we put on the sheets and the bed covers and found we slept so well that we ordered another one for our home.
That's how comfortable it is. Our sleep is now so luxurious and deep that we can't imagine using a different mattress.
Shipping is free. If you're disappointed with the current mattress in your RV, you owe it to yourselves to try the RV mattress by Brooklyn Bedding.
Brooklyn Bedding sends out all of their RV mattresses from their own factory in Arizona. This means they're able to use premium materials at a reasonable price for you with no middleman bringing up the cost.
Don't miss out on the best sleep of your life. Visit rvmattress.com/RV Lifestyle.
But we are big fans of the RV mattress. We ended up, besides the one that we sleep on, we even got two twin RV mattresses for our guest bedroom at our home in Michigan. So our guest bedroom, our main bedroom, and of course our RV with RV mattress from Brooklyn Bedding. We've been very happy with them all. All right. Now, wonder what everybody's talking about these days.
Well, I'm sure Wendy's going to tell us.
Yep. Wendy Boyer reports on all the hot issues most talked about on social media, in our RV Lifestyle community group, on our Facebook page. And she joins us now with this week's social media buzz.
Hi, everybody. As usual, lots of interesting conversations going on in the social media world. In our RV lifestyle community under Mods and DIY Tweaks in Space, we asked folks to share a common problem in RV living that they found a solution for. And for Don, he said his solution was to always carry an air compressor in his rig. Super handy, so he can use it for his trailer, his truck, his bicycles. He even uses it for cleaning the filters and the refrigerator burner. For Terry, now he has a 9-year-old Class A. He said it's a bit older, and he needed somewhere to place items like his GPS, his tire pressure monitoring unit, and his dash cam. So since Terry enjoys woodworking, he built a stand to house these devices, and it works so well, he's been using it for 3 years. For Jeff, the issue was about their freezer and how to better use it for storage. And he said his wife created these cardboard boxes that fit perfectly, labels them. Now their space is much more organized. They can fit more in it, and it's worked really well. And she also put a flexible, thin cutting board on the back of the freezer to collect any frost that may build up. So some good ideas there. Also in our community, in the Crafters Corner space, Rosemary asks, Crafters, what craft do you do in your RV? Well, for those of you who have this hobby, there are a lot of super cute pictures and great ideas in this thread. Nancy, she says she knits dishcloths as she camps. And Kathy, she makes several things, and she included some pictures. One item she makes are these really cute gnomes. They have these little hats on them, and you'll have to look at the picture to check it out. She also paints rocks and has some just beautiful designs that she shared with everybody. Susan, she crochets blankets and animals, and she included many pictures of different animals she's made while RVing, and again, they were adorable. So lots of inspiration there for you crafters. Then meanwhile, over in our RV Lifestyle Facebook group, Angela asks, when a campground is asking for the length of your camper, do they want what's listed on the door of the RV, or do they want the actual bumper to bumper or tip of the bumper measurement? She says she asks because her camper says it's 30 feet, but when you actually measure the bumper to the very tip of the fifth wheel, it's more like 35 feet. So she was confused, and it sounds like by this post, a lot of other people are confused as well. Many people thanked her for asking this question, and everyone had pretty much the same answer, which is what Michelle said. She said, give the end-to-end spot, the end-to-end size it is, so the campground knows what spot they need to assign you. And we had some people who've worked at campgrounds, like Milo said this is what the campground always instructed him to ask. And then we had some people who learned this the hard way. Sherry said she has a rig that the paperwork says it's about 30 feet long, but in actuality, it's more like 38. And once when she gave what the paperwork said, thinking that was the right thing to do, she found herself in a really tight situation, super, super tight campground spot that now she knows she needs to make sure she gives the actual size. So lots of good advice on that thread as well. And that's it for me this week. I'm Wendy Boyer, and I'll see you over at the RV Lifestyle Community or Facebook group.
There is always something to learn from what Wendy reports.
Yep. All right. When we come back, the RV interview of the week, and it's all about e-bikes and RVers.
Right now, I want to talk about being connected on the road, and there's no better place to go than Mobile Must Have. Mobile Must Have is the sponsor of this part of the podcast, and it is a service that is started by RVers for RVers, and it's dedicated to providing the most needed mobile lifestyle solutions. And this month, Mobile Must Have is offering 30 days of free data with the purchase of a new PepLink router. Now, Mobile Must Have has PepLink routers and internet solutions for every type of RVers, from weekend and holiday vacationers to full-time road warriors and remote workers. And PepLink is the gold standard for mobile internet. And Mobile Must Have has a modem and a data plan that will fit literally every RV budget out there. They offer their Fusion SIM, which can provide coverage to every major U.S. carrier. Mobile Must Have also has RV cellular antennas and wiring and cable solutions for Starlink satellite internet. Just go to rvlifestyle.com/mobilemusthave. That's rvlifestyle.com/mobilemusthave. and schedule a free call and free consultation to see the many different internet packages that are available and the one that is just right for you. That's rvlifestyle.com/mobile-must-have.
Welcome back. Time now for the RV Lifestyle interview of the week. And you know, if there is one extra item that everybody buys, I think even more popular than internet hookups, it's got to be an e-bike.
Well, recently we asked our RV Lifestyle community about electric bikes, and nearly 80% they either had one or they planned to buy one. You know, it's just amazing how e-bikes and RVing increasingly go hand in hand, and there are many reasons why.
Now, we thought that it would be fun to hear from probably one of the top experts in e-bikes. He's the CEO of Lectric E-Bikes. That's the brand that we happen to have. And we met some of his representatives at the Tampa RV show and said, we would love to get your CEO on the podcast. And they made it happen. And now you get to meet Levi Conlow. He is the CEO of Lectric Bikes. We're going to talk about e-bikes and RVing.
Well, Levi joins us right now. First of all, hey, as a satisfied electric bike user, I want to say it's great to have you on the program, and I love your bikes. I really do.
Awesome. I appreciate you riding them for me, man.
Most of our audience is very familiar with what and why e-bikes are so good, but there are probably a few out there who still are unaware of why e-bikes are such a perfect fit for RVers. And why they've become so incredibly popular just in the last 4 or 5 years. Walk us through that. Why should RVers be thinking about an e-bike?
Yeah, so honestly, I think part of this has to do with like the original founding of Lectric. Lectric has found great success within the RV community, and we started as a company about 4.5 years ago, and we created our first version of an electric bike, and people came to us and we noticed that those that were most interested in electric bicycles were RVers. They were seeing the possibility of, man, if I had one of these, you know, now I don't have to tow my Jeep behind and I can get across the campground, or I'm going to these cool environments and now I can go explore them with my e-bike. I can zip into town, get all my grocery needs with my e-bike. And so we ended up redesigning the bike, and I talked to my aunt and uncle, who are RVers, to get perspective on what that product should look like, and that's what created the Lectric XP. And what we decided to do was to make it foldable. So a lot of e-bikes in the industry are foldable, so you know you don't have to make the investment into a bike rack or anything like that. So, you know, those things that can kind of help making say yes and make the jump to try was really important for this community, because people were able to talk themselves into it where it's like, yeah, you know what, I am at a cool, you know, park or campground, and I want to be able to get out and explore more. And, you know, a lot of RVers, you know, there's this dormant youthfulness that they've recently tapped into, maybe since retiring or kicking all the kids out of the house, whatever. And when we think of our childhood, you know, how much of it involved just biking around our cities and neighborhoods. And so I think it awakens that dormant youthfulness, and people really enjoy it. So, but I also think part of the reason is that the RV community is so welcoming, and it really is a community. They share their experiences. So when someone gets something cool that makes their, you know, nomad living or RV lifestyle easier, they can't help but tell everybody else about it. And I think that's probably one of the most major things, is just the people and the community that exists, and how, I don't know, awesome they are. I think that's a huge variable to this.
Well, let's talk now, for those who obviously have e-bikes and are carrying them around with them, we know that they're pretty much able to be used anywhere, but there are some places where you can't. Maybe you could start with, where can't you use an e-bike?
So, you know, it's a good question because it varies everywhere, right? It varies from state to state. That's why our bikes ship as class two. Some states allow class three. We have a program in it where you can change it to class one. And those classes determine whether you can use a throttle on the bike or if you can go 28 miles per hour on pedal assist or only go 20 miles per hour on pedal assist and throttle. And so there's rules for every single state. And then even further, there's rules within parks because parks have the ability to regulate and monitor them individually as well. So it can be quite tricky. What we have seen is, I think something along the lines of like over 40 states have accepted the three class system. So there's a lot of commonality now. But when you think of a bicycle in most states and environments, like let's talk national parks, for example. So most states and national parks treat an electric bicycle the same as a bicycle. So where a bike is allowed to go, an e-bike is allowed to go. But you have to be sure that your e-bike meets the definition of an e-bike by the federal government, which is under 750 watts and has to meet of a continuous rating and has to meet the three class system. So it can't be something that goes 35 miles per hour. You know, those ones that kind of sit more like a dirt bike, those fall outside of the scope. But for the most part, you treat an e-bike the same as a bicycle. So you ride it in the bike lane when those are available. You can ride it in the road when there's not a bike lane. So it's not something you actually would be riding on the sidewalk unless that is your safest route. But it's it's really just a bicycle at its core.
So the different classes of e-bikes, when people buy from electric bikes, they don't have to worry about that because they know that your bike is going to be in one of those classes.
Yeah, so we only make bikes that fit the three class system. And all of our bikes ship either class two or class three, but those are available in class three. But if you get a bike that's class three, and let's say you're going to a state park. So state parks have a lot of liberty with how they regulate them. So some of them may only want it to be class one, which means only pedal assist, no throttle, only going 20 miles per hour. You can simply go into our settings and then change it. And then now your bike will just be a class one performance. So if a park ranger or something were to ask you to show your bike to them, you would show them that the throttle and does not work. So it's something that you should be aware of. National parks do have, each park does have some liberties as well, where they can tighten the restrictions on bicycles and e-bikes for where they can be used. And so you can actually go on, National Parks or NPS.gov, I believe.
NPS.gov, yeah.
Yeah, and you can go on that and actually check the park that you're going to and then see what its biking regulations are. And often that biking regulations in the subtext also covers all the e-bikes.
All right, just briefly, what is a class two then? A class two is the throttle actually increases your speed.
Yeah, so you will have an active throttle and it's either a twist or a thumb throttle and you can go up to 20 miles per hour. So if you're pedaling, it's quite interesting because on both class two and class three, both of them can throttle up to 20 miles per hour. The difference between class two and class three is the pedal assist can go up to 28 miles per hour. So that's when you're pedaling and you feel like a superhuman, you know, awesome athlete. You know, that you're providing power along with the bike that is allowed to go up to 28 miles per hour in class three situations. The class two system would only allow both of those riding styles to go to 20 miles per hour.
Okay. Now, you guys have gone through several different variations of different e-bike models. The one question that we hear most from people is, will e-bikes get lighter in weight? Because they're still pretty heavy.
Yeah. I think it is. It's actually technology that's been around for, my goodness, I think we go back a good solid 20 plus years. And there's been improvements in weight, but really not that significant. A lot of the weight savings comes from just the design and the componentry selections. So if you want a powerful motor, that just automatically comes with weight. If you want a, you know, long range battery, you know, when we look at cells being, you know, innovated today, and so, you know, when we first got into the space, 18650 cells were all the craze. Now we got into 21700s for a lot of our bikes, and that change, the cell got bigger, but the and the, you know, per cell amp hours, ampe, it didn't, like, it got bigger as well, but like the weight difference between the two really stayed the same. So it's like the, as we push for more power and more range and everything like that, weight inherently comes up. And it's really this question of efficiency. How can we make the products more efficient so you require less of a battery, less of a motor? I think that's one of the things we're trying to solve for as an industry. But, you know, a lot of the decisions that add a ton of weight is just on the actual bike itself. Are you using 4-inch tires? 4-inch tires add a ton of weight. That's just an automatic one right there. The frame, you know, some companies still use steel frames. You use a steel frame and you're automatically going to be like an 80 or 90 pound bike. So it's sometimes less about the true electronics because, you know, our battery does weigh 7 pounds and motor's probably another 7 or 8. But then there's the rest of the bike and the decisions in the frame material, the tires, the tube. You know, we add slime into every single one of our bikes, and that's something that helps you, you know, avoid getting flats. But that adds weight. So as e-bikes become more robust and more comfortable, weight is just something. But we've been, you know, one of our bikes sits at 46 pounds. And to me, it's probably like one of the perfect bikes for an RVer because it folds so down and so small down in a dimension. But it weighs 46 pounds. When you quickly take the battery and the seat post out, you're, you know, 37, 38 pounds probably. That is really not that much weight when you're comparing that to maybe what a traditional 26 inch bike may weigh. So, yeah, but I'm of the belief we're in early innings of this industry here in the US. So it's definitely not to say innovation is over.
Now, the next question that everybody asked about is hitches, because they do weigh a bit, and it's been a challenge up until the last couple of years to find an adequate hitch for e-bikes, and particularly one that will hold two of them. Has that changed, and do you ever see Electric making a hitch?
No, we got a great partner in Hollywood Racks, and so you're 100% right. It was so difficult when we first got into this space to find e-bike rated solutions because, you know, some of these bikes, when we first came in, our first bike was 65 pounds, 64 pounds, something along those lines. And these bike racks were rated for bikes that were 30 pounds, 35 pounds. So it's just like, it was not going to happen. But fortunately, you know, those like Hollywood Racks, Julie, have, you know, embrace the e-bike industry, created products, which has actually been really cool. And this just shows once they're in how rapidly they can develop. We created an electric tricycle. So the most popular adult tricycle in the United States, just period. and by far the most popular electric tricycle. So we were selling all these things, but a rack didn't exist. So we went to our friends over at Hollywood Racks and we said, hey, we really need you to figure out an adaption. And they came up with an adapter that works with their racks and everything like that. So it was much more of a challenge, 5 years ago. But where we sit today, ultimately, my hope is that we can see pricing come down because there's such investments. But there's a lot of engineering that goes into it, a lot of just sheer raw material and shipping costs. So I get all that. But I would love to see those costs come down so it's not such an investment. Because when you buy an e-bike, you're making an investment. You're spending, $1,000, maybe even $2,000 or more. And then you got to go out and buy a $500 to $1,000 hitch rack. It hurts the wallet quite a bit.
And then there's innovations like, I'm sure, because you guys were at the Tampa RV show and you saw what Keystone RV did with their Montana. They basically built an e-bike garage that comes out on the slide.
It's so cool.
Yeah, we have done surveys on our followers, and 78% of them either already own or plan to own an e-bike. So, so you've got that going for you. And thanks so much for giving us a quick state of the e-bike message for us today on the podcast, Levi.
Happy to do it anytime.
All right. Thank you so much for being a guest on the podcast. And we look forward to having you on again as we get more questions about e-bikes. Thanks, Levi.
E-bikes really are a lot of fun. And I wish that they would get a little easier to bring along in smaller RVs. Now that we're testing Class Bs, it's a challenge. You got to get a pretty good hitch for them. And they're so nice, though, to have. And they're fun to tool around in.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Since I can't get a motorcycle, it's the next best thing. All right. When we come back, we've got the RV news of the week. Stay with us.
There is a new development coming on the market for RVers in Tennessee. It's built by the same company we bought our land from. We just went to look at it, and it is amazing. Mountaintop property, great views, big woods and trails close to the Buffalo River, like our property. Gorgeous countryside. It's only a few minutes from the Natchez Trace Parkway and an easy drive to Nashville. These are big properties, 5 acres and up, and the prices are great. There's even financing. We are really happy with our property. These guys do a great job. It's hard to find acreage where you can have an RV full time, especially in popular destination spots. This is your property, your way. There's electric and high-speed fiber optic internet. No more crowded parks or reservations. You can stay as long as you want. Go to rvlands.net. That's rvlands.net.
Welcome back. Time for the RV news of the week.
Price of campground RV packages spike for the April 8th total eclipse. Remember how we told you last week that the April 8th eclipse was turning into a huge event for RVers? Well, with so many campgrounds filled, many spots that remain in the path of the totality are charging as much as $625 per night.
Whoa.
For an eclipse package. Now, what is an eclipse package? It's a minimum of 2 nights, and included in that package is an RV to camp in.
So you get to rent an RV.
You get to rent an RV for 2 nights to camp in, a campsite, and various other things, varying per location. And RV rentals on RV shares are up 700% to 1,000%, depending upon the location. And if you're still on the fence trying to decide if you want to head out in your rig, campsites do remain, but they're getting harder and harder to find. The 2024 eclipse will travel from Texas up through Maine at a northeastern angle and will be the last total eclipse in North America for 20 years. So Harvest Host, Hip Camp, KOA, and many other sites have special links to help folks find a spot. We suggest booking that reservation soon if you haven't.
And expect to pay a lot. Campgrounds are doing this thing called dynamic pricing, where depending on how quick, it's like the airlines, how quick you want to book and how much demand there is. They just keep raising the prices. And like we say, they're getting out of hand for this eclipse, but you won't be able to do that again for 20 years. So I guess a lot of people want to. Hey, big story out of Thor Industries. They have cut their projected 2024 RV sales, and earnings projections have caused all sorts of RV stocks to drop. Shock values really dropped for several large RV manufacturers and related businesses after Thor, and Thor being the largest RV manufacturer in the world, they cut their 2024 sales and earnings guidance. So when they did that, the shares of Thor dropped about 11% in early trading last week. Camping World dropped almost a percent and a half, and Lippert, LCI Industries, dropped about 4% after the announcement. Thor's chief executive told the Wall Street Journal that the company is cautious now going into its prime selling season, believing that dealers are going to have very tight control over inventories until demand firms up. Thor is the owner of many different RV brands, including Airstream and Heartland, Dutchman, Jayco, Keystone, and even more. Now, we've been hearing rumors for some time. Our sources in the industry tell us that all the manufacturers are very concerned about sales in 2024, and they cite inflation, high interest rates, the election, and all that uncertainty, international tensions, and all of that, they say, is kind of adding to this consumer angst, this uncertainty out there. Recently, Forest River said that it was laying off 83 workers in April. Now, if you're looking to buy an RV and you're in a position to do so, it might be a good time, but the industry's a little nervous right now because there's too much uncertainty out there in the marketplace, and you can see it reflected in those stocks. So that was last week. We'll see what happens this week.
General Motors is recalling nearly 820,000 Sierras and Silverado pickup trucks, with dealers beginning to notify owners March 18th. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration is issuing the recall because of a potential safety issue with the tailgate opening, potentially spilling contents on the road that could lead to a crash. The issue is the electronic gate release that unlocks a tailgate. It can open while the vehicle is in motion, and it can unlock when the truck is in park, causing items to spill out on the road. The models and years affected include Chevrolet Silverado 2020 to 2023, Chevrolet Silverado HD 2020 to 2024, GMC Sierra 2020 to 2023, and GMC Sierra HD 2020 to 2024.
Some of those HDs are really popular with RVers. That's coming up this spring. You want to get that taken care of. 820,000 of them.
That's a lot of them.
So the dates have been announced for the 2024 synchronized Firefly viewing event. This is a big deal. It happens every year at Congaree National Park. And if you've never heard of the synchronized Firefly event, it's pretty bizarre. And it's on a lot of people's bucket list. This year, it's going to be May 16th through the 25th. And so many people want to go that they're doing a lottery to determine who can get in. And that lottery opens at 10 a.m. April 4th. And we will put a link on where you can sign up for it on our show notes for this episode, which you find on our RVLifestyle.com travel blog. Just look under the podcast tab. Okay, so here's what we're talking about. There is this particular type of firefly that lives in this region of the country near Congaree National Park, and they synchronize their lights for maybe 2 to 3 weeks a year. Literally lights up the whole night sky. And so they all blink on and off at the same time. They can find a few of these fireflies also in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. And they also are doing a lottery to allow visitors to come in. It's the male fireflies who do this, and they do it, obviously, during mating season, flashing in unison for about 5 to 8 flashes. And then there's like an 8-second pause, and then they flash again. So the result is a dark forest magically penetrated by these synchronized flashes, and it goes on all night long. We'll put a link to a story that you can find on our podcast show notes, rvlifestyle.com/podcasts. All right, when we return, we will synchronize our clocks, meet you right back here after this, and we'll have the RV question of the week.
When we're asked what's the most important modification we made to our RV, it's an easy answer. Battle-borne batteries. Battle-borne batteries are quality, safe, reliable lithium batteries that allow us to stay out there off the grid longer. Lithium batteries charge faster, they charge fuller, they're longer-lasting, they're maintenance-free, and battle-borne batteries are protected by a 10-year guarantee. Now, in our case, they just dropped into the existing AGM batteries that we have, and they'll probably be the same on your rig, too. Battle-borne battery experts can get those in your rig just like they did with ours. They can also match you up with the right cabling, the inverter, the charger, the solar controller, everything. Jennifer and I swear by our Battle-borne batteries. They allow us to boondock off the grid. Check them out. Go to rvlifestyle.com/lithium. rvlifestyle.com/lithium.
Time now for the RV questions of the week, and we want to remind you that we love getting your questions. We love getting your comments, anything you heard today. Email us. Our personal email is mikeandjen@rvlifestyle.com. All right, what's our question?
Our question is, at 5:30 a.m., I walked into the living room of my travel trailer, and a tiny mouse ran across the room and underneath our theater seats. How do I get rid of it? And this is from Fred.
You know, I caught, Fred posted that on our RV Lifestyle community, community.rvlifestyle.com. And I was up very early, right after he posted it. In fact, he says, don't you ever sleep? I mean, I literally answered it right away. But so hopefully Fred solved this problem. But for those of you who encounter something like that, what you need, if you see a mouse, ASAP, is you need mouse traps. You got to catch those mice that are there right now. Then after you set these mouse traps, then you need to get someone or yourself under your RV and look for any kind of holes that they can crawl into. I mean, didn't we read that you can...
The size of a pencil.
They can get in the size of a pencil. That's they collapse their lungs or something.
Yeah, if their head can fit through, they can fit through.
Yep. So you want to go through really carefully and look for any holes that go into the inside of your RV from underneath and fix those, fill them up. Some people put steel wool in there, put tape over it, whatever you need to do, but get those holes filled up. And if you're going to use the traps, which you should do if you know you have active mice in there, is set them before you go to bed. Because mice are most active after dark when people aren't moving around and they feel they can go in and do whatever they want. Now, there's another product that we got called Grandpa Gus's Mouse Repellent Pouches, and we'll link to that in the show notes for you. But we've had those. They're little small pouches that are filled with some kind of an all-natural material that they soak with cinnamon and peppermint oils. It's a pretty strong odor, don't you think?
Yeah, and you have to switch those out every now and then because the smell dissipates.
Every couple months you want to do that. Mice hate that smell. It's very strong. It kind of irritates you if you get a little too close to it, but you know, we bought a 10 pouch assortment on Amazon. Again, we'll put that link in the show notes. And we've used them, and I think that they did okay. We didn't get any mice, so that's a good sign. But like I say, my only problem is that odor is pretty strong if you get real close to the pouches. You want to put those pouches around any place in your RV where you think mice could get in or have been active. Especially look in the areas where the plumbing or the pipes come up through the floor, like around the toilet, the bathroom, under the kitchen sink. A lot of people swear by those things. We've had them, and I guess since we didn't see any mice, maybe they worked. But first thing, you got active mice, get some traps out there and catch them. All right, you got a question or a comment, we'd love to get them again. It's mikeandjen@rvlifestyle.com. And that's the podcast for this week. we got some more RVs to test and some cruising around the Gulf Coast. We're heading to Alabama this week and then back to Florida and then down into the peninsula. And we've got lots of traveling to do for the next several weeks. And we hope you join us. Follow us on the blog, RVLifestyle.com.
Happy trails.